views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life, the radio show. I am Jenna Capri, here alongside my brother Roz.
Peace.
Today is Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. Roz, how are you doing tonight? You getting a lot of feedback right now?
No feedback. You coming through crystal clear. I hope I'm coming through clear too. I think I should be.
Actually, you're not, Jerry. Greetings, everyone. But actually, you're not.
He sounds okay on my end. Go ahead.
No, I'm hearing the high pitched whine in the background of the interference you'll get with a mic. And the speakers, you know, like when you point the speakers at, the microphone at the speaker, you'll get that noise. So if you're using external speakers, turn those down or direct the microphone away from the speakers, more away from it. Other than that, we're hearing you fine, Brother Jerry. Please continue. Sorry to interrupt.
All right. Thank you. No worries. That's what I was asking. Go ahead, Brother Ross.
Like Scotty says, surviving behind these enemy lines. But it's actually always pleasant to get with you and Scotty and all the other callers and listeners to be able to really get into some of this information. So that's always a positive for me. That's basically what I was charged by my ancestors to do. So, yeah, it's great to be with you this evening. How are you?
I am still learning. Tad, it's been a long day.
Yeah, you can add still learning for me too. Go ahead, brother.
It is good to speak with you.
Absolutely. Same here.
Tonight's discussion. Definitions, discussions, and understanding. Now, we have to understand what each other's are talking about when we're having a discussion. This past Saturday, we had an interview with Dr. Wilf. I messed up the recording. Maybe do another interview with him. Scotty, you missed it. You would have enjoyed this one. He didn't feel the need to give definitions on some of the stuff that we were talking about. And I know Brother Roz has a few things that he wants to release because of that. We're going to start off with this, because the first question that Brother Rice asked was, what is your definition of racism? He's writing
a book.
Well,
hold on, Brother Jenna. Hold on. Pardon me one second. I'm sorry for interjecting. Before we get into that, first, I just wanted to say to the people who are listening to tonight's show, we greatly appreciate you, and we do ask if you get anything off of this network, that you go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and donate some of your financial energy so we can keep the network going and continue to provide you with quality programming and grow the network as well. Another way that you can contribute to the network is to join BTR Community. BTR Community is basically a safe, closed space for black people to communicate with each other online. And it's something where we do not have any corporate funding, so you're not going to see any ads for any commercials. Basically, it's you pay a one-time fee of $24, and that will give you access to the network. Your information will not be data mined. Like I said, it's a closed network, so it's not like anybody will be able to go and search you online and find out anything that you posted. It's basically a safe space created by the Black Talk Radio Network founder, Scotty Reed, for us to be able to have positive, safe discussions about things that are important, pertinent to us as a people globally. So please join the network, and that'll also help us continue to just do what we do, and then also just add to the programming and continue to grow the network. So we greatly appreciate your time and energy, and we would definitely appreciate any amount that you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Also, with BTR Community, you do have the ability to use it for 30 days under a trial basis, just to, you know, get a feel for it and everything. And after that 30-day trial, then you, you know, have the option of joining the network. $24 a year, I mean, that translates to $2 a month. Come on, it just doesn't make sense that we don't have, you know, that we don't have more people saying, hey, this is something I want to be a part of. It's not FedBook. You know, all of the crazy things that happen on FedBook do not happen here. It is a completely different situation, much more uplifting material. Nobody's doing experiments on groups of people and manipulating your psychosocial energy online to see how you respond to things. None of that happens here. It's just Black people talking to Black people, being candid about things important to Black people. Thank you. And I'm sorry, you can go ahead now, my brother Jenner.
Oh, no. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
For the platform. To jump, I got a little bit ahead of myself. Thank you again, Brother Roz. To get back to what I was saying, is Dr. Wiff joined us Saturday. And the discussion was quite interesting, yet he didn't want to give us his definition of racism, which I deem important, not because I believe that your definition is wrong, but I have to get context and from the views that you're getting ready to share and how to accept them. He did not think that was important. And I know Brother Roz had some things that he wanted to address with that. So would you like to get into that first? Because I know you have a lot of other articles that you need to hit them too.
No problem. Absolutely. I mean, it's just a basic human understanding. It doesn't have to be deep or scientific. It's just basic common sense that in order for any two people, or even if it's a group of people, to have a discussion, that you be on the same page. So whatever the topic of discussion is, before you start discussing it, the first thing you do is outline a definition, because a lot of times people don't actually use dictionary meanings. They have vague ideas of what words mean because they've just been using it in ways in which they've heard it used by other people. They didn't necessarily look it up in the dictionary and know what it means. So certain words you might hear them use, like racism, and they have no concept of what racism really is. Their version of racism is very akin to the version that European Americans use to continue to practice more refined racism on their victims, rather than actually understanding this is a global system, that these people function in a way that can be tracked and understood so that you can better protect yourself from their machinations. It doesn't mean that nothing bad is going to happen. It just means that you end up developing a code to either prevent those situations, or if something happens that's out of your control, then you can, you know, use your code to protect yourself from things escalating to a life-threatening level. So as a result, when he told me that, I really wanted to stop the discussion there, because it made no sense to move forward if he was not going to provide a definition for racism, though that is the crux of what his book is. It was entitled Why the Race Battle is Hard to Win. So how can you talk about something that you refuse to define? That's a nullified conversation right there before the first sentence is uttered. And from there, he kind of felt agitated, like we were sticking to the definition. And I just tried to give him examples using things that he actually said out of his own mouth to explain why the definition was so important. And he still didn't compute. So I said, okay, you know, no problem. And it wasn't that I harped on it, but when he was in his portion of the discussion, he would speak about certain things. And the things he was talking about were things that I would have needed a definition of racism to fully comprehend from him, a definition from him. And then I provided what my definition was, and it bothered him. Like, he was literally bothered by that. And I'm like, well, how can we have a conversation around something that you refuse to define? That is just an idiosyncratic, just a total ridiculous kind of scenario to have an important conversation like this around. So there's no disrespect to him at all. It, you know, he's a victim of racism like me, VGQ, but that was just my take on the whole thing. And then the other aspect is that he's a doctor. He's a social psychologist. So definition should be one of the first things on his list. As far as I'm concerned, if you're a doctor and you're dealing as a social psychologist, and these are people who study groups of people and how one group may change its behavior based on its interaction with another group. That's the basic premise of what a social psychologist does. But the idea is that if you are a doctor of any kind, whatever field you're in, I think that is just rudimentary to have a definitions be bang. Let's get that established right off the top. And that's even what I learned just as a writer. You know, whenever you approach a subject, you never assume that everybody knows what you're talking about. You act like everybody in the room is stupid, and you just break it down from the very beginning. You make it as plain as you can so that they understand the premise of what you're dealing with, because sometimes they might know what you're talking about, but they might not fully understand it until you get into it. But if you don't get into it and you just assume, oh, everybody knows what I'm talking about, then what's the purpose of writing the paper? Because they're still not going to get it, because they have their own understanding of what, you know, the premise of your discussion is versus you just defining it off the top. And that's the whole thing with me. Like, I approach everything with that type of methodology. I need to define things. I need to make sure people fully understand those concepts and why I take the position I take. And then I provide a bibliography for people to research. And then they can peruse the information that I peruse and then see if they come up with the same, come to the same conclusions I do. I never try to convince anybody of anything. That's not my job. You know, I try to show people what I know to be true. And I show them why. I say, this is the reason. And then, here, you can go, you know, this is the information that I have here. I probably have more stats, but this is what I put in the bibliography. Use that to get started. And then you can go through the same thing and see if you come to the same conclusion. So that's my take on the definitions thing. The importance of it is just communication. That's what we have above all other species, is that we have the most complex communication. And that revolutionized our ability to really be what, quote unquote, what they call human. Our ability to speak to each other and convey complex ideas. The things we do with words are what ants do with chemicals. They communicate using chemical signatures, and depending on the chemical, the queen can make them do whatever she wants them to do. Bees do the same thing. So they have a complex language, yes, based on chemical communication. We have a complex system of communication based on language. The propagation of the vibration of tones. Those tones are assigned meaning, and so on and so forth. Matter of fact, I suggest people.
Brother Rice.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on, because we got brother. Before you get too deep off into that.
Yeah.
Brother Scotty wanted to add to the.
Oh, please go ahead. Oh, I wasn't. Okay, I didn't see the book.
Go ahead. Racism. Go ahead, Brother Scotty.
Yeah. So nobody's ever asked me what is my definition of racism, and for me, I always go to cut down on confusion, since we all grew up with a Webster dictionary or some English dictionary of some kind, okay, so that we have a rudimentary understanding of a definition of a word. Now, it isn't just simple as there's one definition, because even, you know, if you pull up a dictionary, you'll find sometimes two or as many as three different definitions, because the regions, the different context, regions that come in. I always go with the standard definition of racism, and this comes in conflict with other victims of racism's definition, because they add a caveat to it and say black people can't practice racism. But if you just read the definition of racism, which is the mistreatment of another group of people based on their skin color and mistreating them on that basis, then, and also you view your group as being superior to the other groups. That's the dictionary definition of racism. Now, again, that comes in conflict with other black people who say you got to have power to practice racism, so black people don't have no power. But you may say that, and we could debate whether or not that's true, the different levels of power, personal power versus political power and economic power. So each individual's ability, of course, in this country is going to be different. But if you're in, let's say, a predominant black country like South Africa, you know, or right. any other nations on Africa, you know, I certainly say they had a power, especially since they've been wielding their power lately, about to take rightfully take their land back. And so, but if it was based on injustice, if they were doing an injustice to these people based on the color of their skin, then I would say that's racism, you know. But as I understand the disputes over there, no, it's a land dispute. It ain't got nothing to do with the skin of your color. It got to do with your family name, how you got here, and that whole lineage, and how you obtained this property. Nothing to do with the skin color. That's what white people are trying to confuse us and make it about. But let me cut to the chase, though. I recently came up with my own shorter definition for my own code of racism. Okay. And I'm using, and I do it for a strategy when I'm discussing it publicly. Now, it's interesting that y'all mentioned that Dr. Will is a psycho, what's his title again, or his PhD?
A social psychologist.
Okay, so I've been asking a question. I even made a couple of videos. When we see these white people in the United States practicing racism, and in the presence of their children, that's the clinical definition of antisocial behavior. Which is, if psychologists, I've looked it up, did a little research on child psychology, and that teaching a child antisocial behavior is looked upon in that community as child abuse. So my thing is, it's not just enough to throw these people up on the screen, you know, on the internet, and find out who they are. Yes, you should do that. Dox the hell out of them. But, you know, if it's children involved, if we want to truly in the future break the cycle of racism, if you believe it's a learned behavior, then these people need to have their children removed from them. Okay?
I agree with you.
Because yeah. they're practicing a form of child abuse. They're teaching a child antisocial behavior. If you sit up there and teach a child in an inappropriate manner about sex by showing them porno videos and you know, or watching you do, that's teaching that child a wrong behavior. You understand that? I mean, it goes outside of just sex as well. So when these children, these racist children are present in these instances, that's evidence on video of child abuse. And why isn't, we can then ask the question, why isn't the child, they call it the Child Protective Service or Child Protective Agency, social services. They have these agencies in every state. So I would be interested to know, hey, if we, since you found out the people name you, identify that's their child, put in a formal complaint, a child abuse. Now, of course, depending upon what social worker gets it, it could be a practicing racist who gets it. They work in the social service system, you know, but what if it's a non-white person or a non-racist and they're willing to set that precedence and start prosecuting these people for just like they would any other type, treat them like any other child abuser, using that as a tax. So I call my definition of racism in this context is antisocial abusive behavior. I'm using a clinical basis for my definition.
Very good definition. Dennis. Oh, give me one second, Dennis. Very good definition. Thanks for that addition to the conversation, because what I found the Child Protective Services historically to job, or seen them historically do, I think that their job is the preservation of the white family. And that's what we've seen happen with them. And their job has also been the destruction of the black family. And that's something we've seen as well. Look at Malcolm X's history. That's how his mother, you know, lost her sanity and ended up in an asylum, was when they took him and his siblings from her after the white supremacist organization murdered his father. And then you can even look at up until right like today, you had the all of those black children that were driven off a cliff by the two white lesbian
right.
females.
Right, hey, Ross, but let me just add this before I mute myself.
Sure.
It shouldn't even been no thing for him to give y'all a definition. He could have gave you the clinical definition of
exactly
it since you
were. Exactly my point. Just so to set it's up, like, a baseline yeah. for the conversation. And then later in the program, I said if Scotty was on here, he would have been fit to be tied. We were talking about slavery and that the fact that slavery was never abolished. And actually, Jenna read the 13th Amendment, and the dude denied it. He denied that there was slavery in the United States. And I said to Jenna after the show, I said, you know what? You know, Dr. Welson said that a psychiatrist's job is to help their patient deal with reality even when they do not want to. And I said, we are looking at a social psychologist, a doctor, who is not living in the real world. He heard the 13th Amendment and still denied that slavery was being practiced. And then he asked what basically he said that things were better today than they were back then. And I said, well, you know what? I don't know. And it's Scotty who made me think of this. I said, when you're in prison, you're locked down 23 hours a day with maybe 1 hour of sunshine. And this is the life that you live every day. I was like, our ancestors get to be in the field and get some sun. I said, granted, they might get raped, they might get abused or whatever. I understand that. But that's happening in prison as well. Everything that happened on the plantation is happening in prison. The difference is that you are literally caged like an animal. If you're in solitary, you are, you know, isolated from human contact, which is just psychologically devastating. And in the Khalif Browder documentary, they said that permanent damage can be done to a human being's brain in isolation with it after 72 hours. So anything after 72 hours, you're basically destroying the brain of that human being, because lack of human contact is a basic human need, like fresh air, like clean water and shelter. So yeah, deep. But go ahead, Jen. I'm sorry.
I knew you had a lot left over from that, so I'm sure we'll get back into it as the show goes on. But yes, Brother Scotty, that was a nice definition. I go with the one you say you would debate with, but it's not that I'm wrong and you're wrong, or that his definition would have been wrong.
Right.
It's just we asked so we could have context. Like Brother Rye said, is that the book is about racism, and we can't get the definition. So that's what that was about. The why they are so important. Like you said, Brother Scotty, some people have a different definition. You going with the clinical as a strategy. Excellent strategy.
Absolutely. Unassailable strategy.
So, you know, let's just be clear about what we're talking about. That's the whole premise. Now the discussion that we're gonna have is I'm gonna put this in a, just in case mine is not acting right, I will put this in the conference. Now let me see.
You want to start going through the articles?
I got it, Jerry. Now's not the time to practice. You know, so I got you.
All right, so let's do the articles first. Then we'll
Hi,
get
I'm
that.
Lonnet okay. with Red Eyes.
Hello?
Yeah.
You want to do the article? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that'll make it easier.
Thank you,
because that discussion is going to get heavy. So the first one I wanted to discuss is from Face to Face Africa, and it's entitled Young African Leaders Young African Leaders Converge at the First AU Diaspora Summit in the U.S. to Spur Development. So it says hundreds of African leaders, young African leaders from the continent and in the diaspora are meeting in Washington, D.C. on Friday, August the 3rd, 2018 for the Maiden African Diaspora Young Leaders Summit under the theme of connecting leaders across Africa and the diaspora. Hosted by the African Union, the summit is in partnership with the given organization and so on. So basically, they're getting all of the young leaders in science and all the different areas of people activity that are in school and they're bringing them together for a summit to make connections akin to what Minister Malcolm was doing during his life, basically making connections that can benefit the growth of the continent and also help diasporans. So basically that cross-pollination of ideas and thoughts, and hopefully it'll grow into enterprise as far as economics and things like that. So this could be the beginning stages of the transformation of our relationship holistically with the continent, just with the young, bright minds of the continent and the diaspora working together, which is a beautiful thing. And also, they just finished the Pan-African Conference a couple of weeks ago. I forget where it was located, but they also had a Pan-African Women's Conference where it was all black women, all on a Pan-African agenda for the same thing. So all of that talk about, you know, Pan-Africanism is dead, well, there's a lot of people that still understand those tenets, understand the importance of unifying and assisting each other to grow and to fight the system of white supremacy. And this is just another one of those signs of that. So I just felt really excited about that, and that's something I wanted to share. Was there anything you wanted to say to that, Jenna?
No, man, you covered it all. I seen a few of those, and it's just beautiful to see them reach out to each other.
Absolutely.
But keep
man.
It going, though.
No problem. I'm going to do that. So the next one is from LiveScience.com. How do you know if your cut has flesh-eating bacteria? Flesh-eating bacteria is as scary as it sounds. It's a serious infection that spreads quickly in the body and can result in a loss of limbs and even death. But the condition, known medically as necrotizing fasciitis, is also rare, with about 4 cases per 100,000 people occurring each year in the United States, according to a 2015 study. I've found that flesh-eating bacteria has been happening more and more. In Texas, they had a few cases. In Louisiana, they had some cases, and in a couple other states. So that colloidal silver and its importance is becoming more and more evident with each new disease that comes out. And in this article, you can find out how you can tell if you have it. I would say, just to be safe, make sure that you use colloidal silver to clean your wounds, and that should protect you, period. But this tells you how to spot it so that it doesn't fester and turn into, you know, some gangrenous situation that needs, where they need to cut your limbs off, or where you might suffer from sepsis, which is autoimmune poisoning in the blood. So yes, the next one excuse me, is from ffo-olf.org. And this one is entitled Fluoride Teeth and the Atomic Bomb, a brief history lesson of fluoride. Fluoride was a key chemical in atomic bomb production. According to the documents, massive quantities of fluoride, millions of tons, were essential for the manufacture of bomb-grade uranium and plutonium for nuclear weapons throughout the Cold War. So this I just wanted to touch on because I talked about this before, that fluoride was a component in atomic weapons, and I just wanted to read that just so that you can see that when I said it before, that this article is all about that, its history and everything, so you can find out. And the fact that basically where a lot of us are drinking water and brushing our teeth with water with a radioactive substance that they tell us is wonderful and safe for us and prevents cavities, which is a lie in and of itself. Fluoride has nothing to do with cavity prevention. So just wanted to put that out there. Next one is from tasteofhome.com. If you have a wire grill brush, read this. And it says, keeping your grill clean is crucial for amazing results, but experts recommend that you trade your wire brush for another safer tool. Here's why. So basically what they're finding is that the bristles of the brush are being found in people's food. So as you're scrubbing that grate with the wire brush, shards of metal, pieces of metal are sticking to the grill, and as you put, you know, new meat on there, it's getting in people's food, and of course they're going to have complications chewing on sharp pieces
hey,
of metal,
Ross,
swallowing.
Ross.
Yes.
I don't know how they barbecue, but we use aluminum foil. We don't put no meat directly on the grill.
I was about to say that. Yep. And it just talks about it, so I figured I would talk about it just in case. But, yeah, that's how I was going
to
say it.
But that's good to know, though. That's good to know, because some people do. But that's
exactly.
And it makes sense, too. It makes sense.
Yep. So that's why I said, I just figured, hey, let's put it out there in case there's anybody that does, and they'll know. And they can, you know, make sure they take the proper safety measures. So the next one I'm going to talk about briefly is from Mashable.com. Inmates hack tablets to transfer over $200,000 into accounts. Over 300 inmates in Idaho successfully hacked tablets in an effort to transfer thousands of dollars of credit into their accounts. The tablets made by company JPay are intended for accessing music, ebooks, games, and emails, but because of a loophole, inmates were able to use them to transfer a collective $225,000 into various accounts. Now, this just says the brilliance of the people who they're locking behind bars, even though they did something criminal. These people are brilliant, some of them, and it's interesting because there was a guy I was watching in a documentary on prison, and he said that he had been in jail for, I think it was 15 years. I forget what crime he committed. It was a blackmail. He got out, and he said that it's been, at that time, it was like a little over 2 years since he was out of prison, and he said he still didn't even know how to use his cell phone. He's still learning how to use it because everything changed so drastically that he just feels lost. And he's like, I don't want to go back to jail, but I don't have any skills. The only skills I have are skills I acquired that put me in prison in the first place. So this is incredible that these brothers behind bars, and it's probably from being used, you know, to do basically free labor, and they're having access to this technology, but they're brilliant enough to translate it into knowing even how to hack. So that's crazy, but I just thought that was the most interesting article I wanted to put out there. Wow. Another one is from PopSci.com, and that is how to make sure no one is spying on your computer. A program that spies on your computer activity is one of the most dangerous forms of malware. It won't present you with a ransomware request or announce it's deleting your files. Instead, it just hides silently on your system, watching and recording all of your computer activity. So this article basically tells you how to go about making sure that no one is, you know, doing something like that to you on your computer. I've lost probably about 5 or 6 computers to stuff like that, worms and viruses over the years. So I can tell you it's something that can possibly save your computer and a lot of your information. So that's basically the main reason why I wanted to talk about it. Next, this was from Face to Face Africa, a spotlight on the only U.S. city where black women run the justice system. One of Georgia's newest cities, South Fulton, is being hailed for being the first city in the United States to have its criminal justice system led entirely by black women. After the city was incorporated in May 2017, moves were immediately taken to have in place a municipal court system. So this goes into this situation, this historic situation where these black women run the justice system. So I hope they run it in a way that's helpful to the people and not in line with the system that's already there. That's what I'm hoping they're able to facilitate, since they're in control of that in that particular town, South Fulton. I don't know if you, Jenna, or even Brother Scotty has heard of this particular place, but it seems like, well, actually not seems, it's a very new city. They just incorporated it May of 2017. So, so I just wanted to...
Fulton County. Fulton County in Atlanta, yeah, that's... Say again?
Oh, no, go ahead. I was listening to you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Fulton County down in Atlanta. Very, very black. One of the things that Scotty has been speaking about and right alongside of you, hopefully they're not over mistreating these people that they're running into because they all look like us. But that's what Scotty was talking about, consolidating in a particular area in the South.
That's exactly why I read it.
Laws that's coming... That's governing us. Until we change it to something else, you got to take advantage of the how the rules are made, and they have done that down there, and I think it's beautiful. I see Brother Scotty had something he wanted to say, and then
what do you do,
Brother
Scotty? Go ahead, Brother Scotty.
No, I didn't have anything to say, but I heard a story.
Yes, but that's great. I wanted to go back to that just to mention on that fluoride, man, because you can go on and see what the fluoride does to nature, you know.
No joke. It'll really mess you up.
Concrete.
It's crazy. I'm sorry for interjecting. So, I think need to look
into that. Doctors tell us that it's good all the time, but, you know, we just got to do our own due diligence, as Brother Davis would say. Yeah. And go check this stuff out, because we're slowly killing ourselves in more ways than one. You know, some of these things we can mitigate, though.
It also calcifies the pineal gland, too.
The hack that you was talking about, the inmates.
Yes. Man.
Like you said, these, this is not a non-victimless crime, but... you know, that's where it's going to. Dave talking about it, you know, cryptocurrencies, people are trying to dive into them, me myself being one of them. You know, we have to be very, very careful with these, because that could be some of our money, and we all have to be on the internet to spend it. What, not for everything, but we're all wrapped up part of this, so we have to be we have to watch these things. Appreciate these articles. You can go ahead,
Jenna,
Brother Ross.
Jenna and Ross.
Oh,
yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
If I may revisit the opening of the show, what we were talking about in the definitions, and you know, I gave my clinical definition of racism as describing it as antisocial behavior, and yeah. And then the story you just shared about people who are the dominant population, no, dominant is not the proper word, the majority population in a county, because politics is local, that's what they're talking about when they say it's local. But the story of all these black women, hopefully they're practicing justice and not just yep. another cog in the system. But, you know, when you can do that on a state level, then you can pass laws to make these things to where, like Ross was talking about, social service has been keeping white families together at every cost, you know what I'm saying? But black children, yeah. they ready to take, or non-white children, period, as we see on the border, they ready to take them, you know what I'm saying? But in the UK, and I never heard of this being prosecuted in the UK, but it does sound like some worthy consideration of investing some time and energy if you want to pass a law instead of trying to repeal, stand your ground, pass some stuff that you know what I'm saying, put your energy in the direction of passing something that's going to help, actually help,
right.
You know, or getting the people in place who won't you stand your ground or adjudicate it on in a racist basis. But you can criminalize racism. Again, it goes to the words. By this is a UK, the Crime and Disorder Act of 1998 defines antisocial behavior as acting in a manner that has caused or was likely to cause harassment, alarm, or distress to one or more persons not of the same household as the perpetrator. Now, that is a very codified way to talk about racism without right. using the R word, as I've heard Mr. Fuller say, when you in a public square, so to speak, town hall, or you're trying to pass legislation, you don't want to use buzzwords, even though it might be the most accurate word to use or the term to use. But again, we all got different definitions of racism. It, like he said, white people get on the defensive when you bring yep. up the R word, you know? And so, but when you call it antisocial behavior and don't assign a color to it, you know what I'm saying? Right. And what have you. And then the medical community, psychologists, then they have to be, you know what I'm saying? We have to get them to write articles and put propaganda out to bring about, you know, whether the passage of such a bill or the prosecution. But, you Absolutely. Know, antisocial behavior. So I would view again, but I don't know what they judges is like. Again, interpretation of these words. Because, again, we all got different definitions, and that judge may not define something the same as I define it. And that's why we be looking at them sometimes like they crazy, but we really know, you know, they just puppets being paid. So, yeah, but the Crime and Disorder Act of 1998 was passed in the UK. And it defines antisocial behavior as an actor in a manner that has caused or was likely to cause harassment, alarm, or distress to one or more persons not of the same household. So does that not sound like racism? This things yes, it that does. Yeah, it yes, sounds it like it to me. I just want to put that out there.
No, you adding great. You adding great, and we appreciate that, Brother Scotty. We have another caller though.
Okay.
Area code 646.
Okay,
what's your name? Where you calling from? What's your question or comment?
Peace, y'all. Peace to Real Life Radio. This is Tag.
Peace, Brother Tag. What's Peace, love?
What's doing? I'm really appreciating the content right now, and I'm you know, type swamped out here at the moment, but I had to call in just to briefly ask about where the articles are posted that you've been discussing. I'm particularly intrigued and would like to follow up around the JPay article that you outlined. So I looked.
Mm-hmm. It's in the Real Life the Radio Show group. So when you go into BTR Community on the main page, just click the little hamburger looking button, and you'll see the link for groups. Click on that, and it'll take you to the list of groups. Just scroll down a little ways, and you'll see Real Life the Radio Show group. That's it there, and you'll see the posting for tonight's show. All of the articles are in there.
Yeah, great looks, and I will check that out right now. JPay, you know, as y'all know, there's a lot there, and that's Securus behind that, which, you know, has been featured in some articles somewhat recently and has a sprawling presence in the prison slavery complex. So shouts to heads that are undermining that particular operation on whatever level. And shouts to y'all again for the broadcast. I'll continue listening on mute.
Peace and love, brother. And you could join the group, too, so you can always get, like, any alerts when anything's posted there, because there's certain things I specifically post there, and then there's other stuff I post on the main page. So, yeah, love the content. Love your conversations with brother, and wish you all the best, and stay safe where you are, like Scotty says, behind these enemy lines.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you again, Brother Ted.
Absolutely. Thank you. Y'all as well.
Thank you. So,
I know you. Go ahead, Brother Ross.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Nah, just to go ahead on and get the rest of these articles.
Yeah, so we're on the same page. Okay. So, the next one is from lifescience.com, and it's entitled Babies Died in a Drug Trial Tragedy. Why were their mothers given Viagra? Earlier this week, a study came to a surprising and heartbreaking halt. A Dutch drug trial looking into the effects of sildenafil, the generic version of Viagra, on a rare but serious fetal development condition was cut short after 11 infants died. Please, black pregnant mothers, I know that they're saying this was a really horrific disease. Please don't let them give you drugs. Don't let them give you Viagra. What would a drug that stimulates erection in males have to do with a fetal disease? Like, that, it just sounds like an oxymoronic endeavor right there, and I feel so bad for those people who lost their children. But those black people, please, that we are always at the forefront of experimentation, and they experiment on us to perfect drugs to help save white people. So please don't do it, because as this study shows, 11 mothers lost their child. So just want to throw that out there. The next one is from Face to Face Africa. It's Kwaku Anansi, the only folklore character to travel out of Africa and become a global symbol of resistance. Amongst all the African folktale characters that exist, Kwaku Anansi is the most popular and important. The West African folktale character is a spider with human characteristics from the Akan culture of West Africa. The Akan ethnic group is the biggest ethnic group that umbrellas a number of subgroups in Ghana, and parts of, and it goes into, because it's not just Ghana, but a couple of the surrounding countries that the Akan subgroups belong to. But I think that is one of the most important deities. That was a deity that really helped our ancestors in a lot of ways. There's a great book called movie called Ill-Gotten Gains with starring Jaimin Huntsu, where they have like this deity that's in the wood that travels with them, in the wood of the ship that travels with them from the continent. And also in the show American Gods, they actually anthropomorphize Kwaku Anansi into a black male character. And he actually was telling the slaves what was going to happen to them once they got to America, what was going to happen to them on the slave ship. And they ended up burning the ship and sinking it in the middle of the ocean. They revolted once he told them what to expect. And so this deity is one that I've heard about since I was a child. So all the way in Trinidad and Tobago, we deal with that. Or a lot of the islands, anywhere there's black people in the Caribbean, you're going to find that they have stories of Anansi somewhere, or Brer Rabbit. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And in this article, you know, people can research Anansi. But Yeah, powerful, powerful entity and folklore character. He's kind of similar to John the Conqueror too. He has kind of some of those properties as well. So yeah, just wanted to put that out there for people who might be interested. Now, there's one last article that's really important before we move forward that I wanted to read, and I told you about this, Jenna, before, because of just the content is just phenomenal. It's entitled, excuse me, it's from Mint Press News. Let me click on it real quick and just open it up. But it's it was just something that struck me when I came across it, and I said, this is something we have to talk about, and I know probably Scotty will want to get in on it. So it's if it weren't for these 8 myths, American society would collapse. It's time to wake up. Our society should have collapsed by now. You know that, right? No society should function with this level of inequality, with the possible exception of one of those prison planets in the Star Wars movie. 63% of Americans can't afford a $500 emergency. Yet Amazon head Jeff Bezos is worth a record $141 billion. He could literally end world hunger for multiple years and still have more money left over than he could ever spend on himself. Worldwide, 1 in 10 people only make $2 a day. Do you know how long it would take for one of those people to make the same amount as Jeff Bezos has? 193 million years. If they only buy single-ply toilet paper. But put simply, you cannot comprehend the level of inequality in our current world or even just in our nation. So shouldn't there be riots in the streets every day? Shouldn't it all be collapsing? Look outside. The streets aren't on fire. No one's running naked and screaming, usually. Does it look like everyone's going to work at gunpoint? No. We're all choosing to continue on like this. Why? Well, it comes down to the myths that we've been sold, myths that are ingrained in our social programming from birth, deeply entrenched like an impacted wisdom tooth. These myths are accepted and basically never questioned. I'm going to cover 8 of them. There are more than 8. There are probably hundreds. But I'm going to cover 8 because A, no one reads a column titled Hundreds of Myths on American Society. B, these are the most important ones. And C, we all have other shit to do. Myth number 8, we have a democracy. If you think we still have a democracy or a democratic republic, ask yourself this. When was the last time Congress did something that the people of America supported that did not align with corporate interests? You probably can't do it. It's like trying to think of something that rhymes with orange. You feel like an answer exists, but then slowly realize it doesn't. Even the Carter Center and former President Jimmy Carter believed that America has been transformed into an oligarchy. A small corrupt elite control the country with almost no input from the people. The rulers need the myth that we're a democracy to give us the illusion of control. Myth number 7, we have an accountable and legitimate voting system. Gerrymandering, voter purging, data mining, broken exit polling, push polling, superdelegates, electoral votes, black box machines, voter ID suppression, provisional ballots, super PACs, dark money, third parties banished from the debate, and 2 corporate parties that stand for the same goddamn pile of FedEx crap. What part of this sounds like a legitimate election system? No. We have what a large Harvard study called the worst election system in the Western world. Have you ever seen where a parent has a toddler in the car seat and the toddler has a tiny, brightly colored toy steering wheel so he can feel like he's driving the car? That's what our election system is, a toy steering wheel. Not connected to anything. We all sit there like infants, excitedly shouting, I'm steering. And I know it's counterintuitive, but that's why you have to vote. We have to vote in such numbers that we beat out what's stolen through our ridiculous race system. Myth number 6, we have an independent media that keeps the rulers accountable. Our media outlets are funded by weapons contractors, big pharma, big banks, big oil, and big fat hard-on pills. Sorry to go hard-on pills, but we can't get anything resembling hard news because it's funded by dicks. The corporate media's job are to rally for war, cheer for Wall Street, and froth at the mouth for consumerism. It is their mission to actually fortify belief in the myths I'm telling you about right now. Anybody who steps outside that paradigm is treated like they're standing on the playground wearing nothing but a trench coat. Myth number 5. We have an independent judiciary. The criminal justice system has become a weapon wielded by the corporate state. This is how bankers foreclose on millions of homes illegally and see no jail time. The activists often serve jail time for nonviolent civil disobedience. Chris Hedges recently noted, quote, the most basic constitutional rights have been erased for many. Our judicial system, as Ralph Nader has pointed out, has legalized secret law, secret courts, secret evidence, secret budgets, and secret prisons in the name of national security, unquote. If you're not a part of the money class, you are pressured into releasing what few rights you have left. According to the New York Times, quote, 97% of federal cases and 94% of state cases end in plea bargains with defendants pleading guilty in exchange for a lesser sentence, unquote. That's the name of the game. Pressure people of color and poor people to just take the plea deal because they don't have millions of dollars to spend on a lawyer, at least not one who doesn't advertise on beer posters. Myth number four, the police are here to protect you. They're your friends. That's funny. I don't recall my friend pressuring me into sex to get out of a speeding ticket, which is essentially still legal in 32 states. Police in our country are primarily designed to do two things, protect the property of the rich and perpetrate the completely immoral war on drugs, which by definition is a war on our own people. We lock up more people than any other country on earth, meaning the land of the free is the largest prison state in the world. So all these droopy-faced politicians and rabid talking heads telling you how awful China is on human rights or Iran or North Korea, none of them match the numbers of people locked up right here under Lady Liberty's skirt. Myth number three, buying will make you happy. The myth is put forward by many floods of advertising we take in, but also by our social engineering. Most of us feel a tenacious emptiness and alienation deep down behind the surface, our surface emotions. For a while, I thought it was gas. That uneasiness is because most of us are flushing away our lives at jobs we hate before going home to seclusion boxes called houses or apartments. We then flip on the TV to watch reality shows about people who have it worse than we do, which we all find hilarious. If we were lucky, we'll make enough money during the week to afford enough beer on the weekend to help it all make sense. I find it takes at least four beers for everything to add up, but that doesn't truly bring us fulfillment. So what now? Well, the ad says buying will do it. Try to smother the depression and desperation under a blanket of flat screen TVs, purses, and jet skis. Now, does your life have meaning? No. Well, maybe you have to drive that jet ski a little faster, crank it up until your bathing suit flies off and you'll feel alive. The dark truth is that we have to believe the myth that consuming is the answer, or else we won't keep running around the wheel. And if we aren't running around the wheel, then we start thinking, start asking questions. Those questions are not good for the ruling elite who enjoy a society based on daily exploitation of 99% of us. Myth number two, if you work hard, things will get better. According to Deloitte's Shift Index survey, 80% of people are dissatisfied with their jobs. And quote, the average person spends 90,000 hours at work over their lifetime, unquote. That's about 1/7 of your life, and most of it's during your most productive years. Ask yourself what we're working for, to make money? For what? Almost none of us are doing jobs for survival anymore. Once upon a time, jobs boiled down to plant the food, I eat the food. If I don't plant food, equals I die. But nowadays, if you work at a cafe, someone will die if they don't get their super calf mocha frat almond piss latte. I kind of doubt they'll keel over from a blueberry scone deficiency. If you work at Macy's, will consumers perish if they don't get those boxer briefs with the sweat-absorbent ass fabric? I doubt it. And if they do die from that, then their problems were far greater than you could have known. So that means that we're all working to make other people rich because we have a society in which we have to work. Technological advancements can do most everything that truly must get done. So if we wanted to, we can get rid of most work and have tens of thousands of more hours to enjoy our lives. But we're not doing that at all, and no one's allowed to ask these questions, not on your mainstream airways at least. Even a half step like universal basic income is barely discussed because it doesn't compute with our cultural programming. Scientists say it's quite possible artificial intelligence will take away all human jobs in 120 years. I think they know that will happen because bots will take the jobs and then realize that 80% of them don't need to be done. The bots will take over and then say, quote, stop it. Stop spending a seventh of your life folding shirts at Banana Republic. One day we will find monuments to the bot that told us to enjoy our lives and leave this shirt wrinkly. And this leads me to the largest myth of American society. You are free. Myth number one, you are free. And I'm not talking about the millions locked up in our prisons. I'm talking about you and me. If you think you're free, try running around with your nipples out, ladies, and guys, take a dump on the street and see how free you are. I understand that there are certain restrictions on freedom we actually desire to have in our society. Maybe you're not crazy, but everyone leaving a Stanley steamer in the middle of your walk, maybe you're not crazy about everyone leaving a Stanley steamer in the middle of your walk to work, but a lot of our lack of freedom is not something you would vote for if given a chance. Try building a fire in a parking lot to keep warm in the winter. Try sleeping in your car for more than a few hours without being harassed by police. Try maintaining your privacy for a week without a single email, web search, or location data set collected by the NSA and telecoms. Try signing up for the military because you need college money and then one day just walk off the base going, yeah, I was bored. I thought I would just not do this anymore. try explaining to Kentucky Fried Chicken that while you don't have the green pieces of paper they want in exchange for the mashed potatoes, you do have some pictures you've drawn on a napkin to give them instead. Try running for president as a third-party candidate. Jill Stein was shackled and chained off to a chair by police during one of the debates. Try using the restroom at Starbucks without buying something while black. We are less free than a dog on a leash. We live in one of the hardest working, most unequal societies on the planet with more billionaires than ever. Meanwhile, Americans supply 94% of the paid blood used by the world, and it's almost exclusively coming from very poor people. This abusive vampire system is literally sucking the blood from the poor. Does this sound like a free decision they made, or does that sound like something people do after immense economic force crushes down around them? One could argue that sperm donation takes a little less convincing. Point is, in order to enforce this illogical and moral system, the corrupt rulers most of the time don't need guns and tear gas to keep exploitation mechanisms humming along. All they need are some good, solid bullshit myths for us to all buy into, hook, line, and sinker. Some fairy tales for adults. It's time to wake up. So.
That.
I had to read that.
Yes.
Man. Oh, he just hit it. And like the whole Hegelian dialectic was just right there in those 8 minutes right there. Go ahead, Jen. I'm sorry.
That's a wonderful article. I think he used the puns real well, just enough to keep people to keep reading. But yeah, we should have just hit the 8. We running up here on these last 5 minutes for the top of the hour.
Yes, sir.
Great article. All of them were. Once we come out the break, we're gonna go right on into the first video.
Yes, sir.
And, as we close off, we'll get back into the discussion because I wanted to discuss the along with the definition of racism. Like Brother Scotty was saying, it's just good to have context when you're discussing these type of issues. And for his book, we needed that. And it was something that he didn't want to relieve. So we'll go ahead on to the break and we'll come right into the video. You're listening to Real Life Radio.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Hi, I'm Lonnet with Red Ice. Yes, it's okay to be white. It's okay to love being white. It's okay to want to live around other white people. And it's okay to prefer your own people. Everyone else does. And in fact, non-whites across the world also love whites because they keep mass migrating to come live next to us in the countries we built. But once they go to college, they turn into Rudy Martinez from Texas State University. He wrote a piece for the University Star titled, "Your DNA is an Abomination." Yes, he's talking about white people. His trope goes on about how only a few white people are decent, that white people are an aberration, how he hates us because we shouldn't exist. Oh, and white death means liberation to all. So is Rudy going to off himself for the greater good since he possesses some European DNA?
Whiteness is a form of racial oppression, sure. The suggestion is that it is somehow possible to separate whiteness from oppression, and it is not. There can be no white race without the phenomenon of white supremacy.
To be white is a mortal sin in the wacky church of anti-whiteness. That's right, if white people were genocided, there would be world peace. Daily life would be unicorns and gumdrops across the globe. All those tribal wars in Africa and the conflict in the Middle East, it would simply cease to exist. The Third World would become the most prosperous places on the planet. And Mexico would have the most advanced space program. If only white people didn't exist. But if you confront an anti-white, they'll spout cultural Marxist mumbo-jumbo and say they're not really talking about killing off white people, just the social construct of whiteness. They have to twist and contort, do back handsprings to try and excuse the fact that they're really attacking the very existence of white people.
How whiteness is defined. And I can stand up here and read this to you, but I'd rather you guys read it. So can I get somebody to read the first bullet point of white, how whiteness is defined?
Socially and politically. Oh.
They believe the white race is a social construct. But all of a sudden, they see white when it comes to telling them to die off or give away their stuff. Rachel Dolezal is a product of the idea that race doesn't exist and whiteness is a social construct that must be denounced and destroyed. How'd it work out for her?
You know, what is whiteness or blackness? Or, you know, what does it mean to fall in between? Or in what ways are we who we are? I'm not part of that owning, praising, living whiteness. Like, that's just not... That's not me.
Well, being able to distance yourself from that is kind of a privilege, right? Being able to say, you know what, I don't want anything to do with the whiteness.
Distancing yourself from privilege is privilege.
When the police show up, I can't say, whoa, 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 whoa. Just so you know, I'm not black. I'm actually white. It doesn't work that way.
Part of me wonders, I'm like, are people actually saying you have privilege and you've been privileged? Or are people more interested in just calling me white?
If race is just a made-up idea, then Rachel is right. She can identify as black. No, no, it's white privilege that she's able to walk away from her whiteness. All of a sudden, the white race does exist, and whiteness cannot be separated from a white human being. Every white person is guilty of it, even if they denounce their own race, have black kids, and fight for black interests. Anti-whites push what's convenient at the time. They don't even believe their own lies. They'll say, well, whiteness is a paradox and it's hard to explain. No, it's a bunch of lies meant to confuse and manipulate whites so they do whatever they want them to do. If whiteness is a social construct that we can simply choose or reject, and if it's not tied to genetics, then blackness, Jewishness, Asianness, and so on are also fake. Okay, then write an article at your uni about the social construct of Jewishness and blackness and see what happens.
Blackness is an identity that can be plausibly argued. Black studies is the study of a people that has formed itself in resistance to its oppression.
Whiteness studies is a direct attack on white people, their history, culture, traits, and everything that belongs to them. Everything that makes up their identity as a group. But who's defining what it means to be white? Non-whites. If anyone is going to define what it means to be white, it's gonna be white people. But you see, it's only okay to identify as white if you are advocating for the total annihilation of your race. It's commonplace to see editorials flat out talk about white genocide. Because after genocide, then the world will be cotton puffs and rainbows, peace on earth.
Imagine everyone living together in peace. That would be not necessarily a perfect world, but a good world. And how do we get to that good world is the question. A world without conflict. And to me, my interpretation of these words is it would be a world, or U.S., without whiteness.
Yeah, sure. That's why the most peaceful, safe, and prosperous nations are white. Owen of InfoWars interviewed students at Texas State about this blatant racist article. He's a nice guy, but he was way too soft and let stupidity off the hook. The article was literally calling to end the white race. And what were some of their responses?
The opinion was very extreme, but do I agree that the opinion should be suppressed because it is extreme? No, I don't.
Well, free speech. A college paper calls to destroy white people and says they shouldn't exist, which is inciting hatred if I ever heard it, and it's not hate speech. But a few flyers saying it's okay to be white causes nationwide panic and hysteria.
Lee is on the UC Davis Black Leadership Council, which called a town hall meeting Friday to discuss the posters and racial tension on campus.
Whoever's posting these photos, I don't think they're realizing how triggering these posters are for people.
Free speech entails a white person fighting back against the constant onslaught against their group. Wow, what white privilege. Anti-whites are so full of their own selfish interests and their group's expansionist agenda that they can't see the big, fat, obvious double standard glaring them in the face, taunting them every day. There's no point in debating. They lack the brain capacity to understand the most simple argument. They lack any empathy whatsoever to even put themselves in our shoes for one moment, when whites are constantly judging themselves. They say white people are an abomination, but let me into your schools and give me a job in your business. Let me live in your neighborhood. You're so awful, but let me into your country now because I want a better life. An abomination, but please help us white people with foreign aid, medical technology, and food. So awful, but more equality and human rights. Yeah, that's a white thing too. Other white people things: cars, planes, trains, electricity, internet, toilets, medical advancements, photography, printing press, eyeglasses, space travel, and the computer you anti-whites use to bash white people. Other forms of whiteness include having a clean, safe neighborhood, speaking English, table manners, and having a mom and dad. I could spend hours talking about the good things white people and our whiteness has brought to humanity, but anti-whites are too dim-witted or too full of hate and envy to realize and admit that most of what they use and think on a daily basis is courtesy of white people. Forget that, more racism, more slavery, more stolen land, and the funniest of all, white men stole these inventions. They stole it right out of our heads. They also say our success has only been because of the devaluation or subjugation of non-whites. Yeah, that's why the Nordic countries, who have been isolated with their own people and who did not import slaves, are the most successful. They say that ending whiteness is ending racism because only whites can be racist. No, no, no. It has everything to do with hostile groups guilting white kids into giving away everything their ancestors rightfully earned for their children to have a better life.
Do not adjust your screens. That is 10 happy fingers of things that the Black Lives Matter movement would like white people to give to them. Keywords there: give, give, give. White people, if you don't have any descendants, will your property to a black or brown family? How about no? White people, rebudget your monthly so you can donate to black funds for land purchasing. How about you get a job and buy your own shit? This is a good one. Check this out. Call the police on those sheetless Klan Nazis and other lil dick white men. Get they ass fired. Now,
attacking whiteness is a scapegoat used by those who cannot succeed on their own, used by people whose own group has failed. I mean, come on, it's even white people who fund these whiteness programs in colleges. Yet another example of how a multiracial, multicultural society doesn't work. Thanks for watching. Before you go,
thank you, Brother Scatter.
Yes, thank you.
Before we get into this, if you have a question or comment, by all means, you can give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. Press ** so you can be heard, and we'll get with you as soon as possible. Now, that was a very interesting video, Brother Roz.
Yes. I wanted people to really see how a lot of white people actually think, and I'm talking about working class white people. And matter of fact, tonight I posted an article that was talking about all of this backlash from the actual same people who voted for him, that they actually can't take it because they're getting nothing out of him, because they're starting to understand it's a class thing with Trump. You're not in his class. So yeah, you might be white, but you're not one of my folks. So you just like the rest of them to me. And they've been feeling it now, and some of them are starting to really think about voting for him. So it's just the way that they, and actually Scotty just said it. You know, he said that the white woman was playing the victim and pushing whiteness, and that's really what she was doing. But this is what a lot of them do. They just don't do it in front of us. And these are the types of videos that these people get into to get themselves convinced that the problem is non-white people. And, you know, this is the way the non-white people think. And based on this premise, you know, they want to get rid of us. So go ahead. What was your take on it? Because I know you want to chop it up, and I do too.
Well, it was, like you said, this is the propaganda that they spit out. Remember, mm-hmm. A lot of these folks have no comprehension skills whatsoever, so they only understand what they're being told. They don't go check on none of this stuff.
Exactly.
Some of these they're not smart enough to think for themselves, so they follow along. You know, this runs right into this instance where this white man, hold on, I just had this pulled up. Florida, the Stand Your Ground issue that they're having right now.
Okay.
This white man arguing with this man's wife, he push him down, he pull out and shoot him. I already killed him. Yeah. Now, how are we supposed to respond to these things? Same thing in Minneapolis. These white cops chase the man down because they feared for their life. Now, I haven't got to really analyze the video myself. He supposedly had a gun and he was running and they fired the shot because he fired a shot. But when they found his dead body had the shell that he fired before they start shooting. So, you know, we hear all of this stuff. We talked about it quite some time ago about how the police are being justified. They're making the law. And we're seeing it more and more and more. And like you said, they listen to this type of rhetoric, and then the only way that you're going to hear them espouse anything that could help would be empathy, which they have none, especially at this point with Trump doing the dog whistles and making everyone comfortable with who they always have been. Mm-hmm. But are willing to show it at this point. So, like, how do we respond once we know these particular aspects? How do you respond? You push him down, whether he pushed him hard enough to fall or what have you. Like I said, the suspect, which has proven himself to be a race soldier, and in my point of view, murdered the man. Now, does that mean that, and I'm not telling nobody to do anything, but if you're gonna die, is that the way? Is that gonna cause other brothers to just go ahead on and do it to him? Like that's a question that I have for you and all of the callers and listeners also. Like, how are things to be handled now? We talked about it a while back. Like, where I'm from, all of the people who try to give up, they end up getting murdered.
Yeah.
But the brothers who be shooting at the officers, when they feel their life's in danger, they somehow make it to prison or to jail. Hopefully not to go to prison. But they make it in, though.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that, Brother Roz?
I think what Dave was talking about yesterday, because we found out that law pertained only to states on the West Coast. So that would mean Washington through California all the way to Hawaii, all the other states in the country, that law doesn't apply as of yet. It only applies to the jurisdiction of the Ninth Circuit Court, which is that area. Now, I think that law is going to be important if another incident comes up and they cite that particular situation, if that ends up in the Supreme Court's hands, then that can make it the law of the land. And I think that is something we should shoot for, because I think if everyone has the ability to be armed and open carry like that, these police are not, like they said it yesterday, you know, the assumption that this person's a criminal because they have a gun goes out the window. And they wouldn't be able to just run around shooting black people because they have a gun on them, because everybody's going to have a gun on their waist. And having them in places where they're allowed, because, you know, of course, if a business says they don't allow guns on the premises, you wouldn't be able to take it with you. But pretty much everyone's going to have a weapon on them. So the police are going to really have to think twice before trying some slick crap, because this person might be quicker on the draw and put one between their eyes before they try to murder them. So, you know, I think that a lot of these situations are one-offs, and sometimes I've seen it where people who are hyper-aggressive are treated differently. In some cases, they'll straight shoot them, and in other cases, they'll be very cautious about how they deal with that person. You know, a famous case of that was Larry Davis, you know, and I implore people, you can probably find it for free on YouTube. Check out Troy Reed's the Larry Davis story. he took New York, the NYPD, on the longest manhunt in New York State history, 19 days on the run. And he stayed in New York City and was given help by the people. And, you know, basically he was forced to sell drugs to the police at 13, taught to shoot by them, and basically was robbing drug dealers for the NYPD and then selling the drugs he was robbing from them. And they ended up giving his girlfriend at the time, who was pregnant, and the police purposefully got her strung out on crack, and she lost their son due to her crack use that the police facilitated purposefully. And when he found out about that, that's when he turned against the police, and they went to murder him because of everything he knew. And his whole crew used to sell for the police, and they tell the story of this situation. And it's just an incredible documentary, but it's something where, you know, he was such a good shot. He shot like 6 police when they tried to murder him in his sister's house. And at the end, when they finally caught him, he was able to negotiate himself into the hands of the FBI because he said he didn't trust the NYPD that they would murder him. And they literally, because they knew his marksmanship skills were no joke, because he shot cops in the face and everything. So bottom line is, he was able to negotiate himself in safely and was taken into custody that way. They ended up, you know, murdering him in prison, and the police had tried to murder him multiple times. That's how the documentary starts, is with the police beating the friggin' heck out of him. So you get to see it, but I see it's like a 50-50 thing. It depends on the circumstances. But in general, what I find is, you know, Dr. Welson has said this on the Cows before. She was on there like 31 times, you know, that white people know who they can do things to. They're predators. So they can look at a person and sense who they can abuse and get away with it, and who they better not try that with. And that's something that I've personally seen. I've even seen it with myself. You know, I've seen it with myself, because I just have a temper. So certain things I just don't tolerate. And I don't tolerate them, and that's just that. And when I react a certain way, you know, these white people, they know the deal. And that's pretty much what it is, you know. And it's not saying that things can't go left, but that's just the way that I handle things, and it works for me. It might not work for someone else. So I'll put it out there like that. But ultimately, my question, yes.
Now, my question is, now you answered part of it. Now, that would be with the police. Okay. But what about with the ordinary Joe Blow citizen? Because a lot of places, we know, even when there is an open carry, that if we're spotted by these slave catchers, then a lot of us still get harassed by them during our open carry. Not everybody, but this does happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, so what's with this everyday person that you just run across? Like I was stating, you was talking about the actual law, but I mean, in that instance, are we to shy away from that and let our people be mistreated, assaulted? Or are we to get right on in there and just accept the consequences that way? Because going halfway normally gets us murdered, and we see it time and time again.
I would say it like this, because this is just the way that I deal with situations. Whenever it comes to the point that I have to put my hands on someone, I'm going to lay you out. I'm not going to just hit you and ease back and give. No, I'm making sure that you are immobile, and you're going to either be out cold, or you're going to be in such severe pain you're not going to want no more. That's how I do things. So he wouldn't have just got put to the floor. That would have, that was the start. Forget it. That would have been the beginning of his misery. He might have ended up in the hospital. And if I discovered he had a gun, he might not have made it to the hospital. Yeah, so that's how I roll. I think that's where the brother probably made the mistake, was that he thought it would have been that simple as just pushing him. And he probably thought to turn his back on the guy, which is what I always say. I don't turn my back. If I have a problem with anyone, but especially a white person, I'm not turning my back on you. That's not going to happen, because that's the type of stuff they do. You remember the 15-year-old boy down south that bumped into a white man in front of a dollar store? They had an exchange of words. He went into the dollar store. The white man went in behind him. It was a 60-something-year-old white man, 65 or 66-year-old man. They went into the store. The black male, they got into it in the store again. He left the store. He was walking down the street minding his business. The white man walked up behind him and blew his head off.
Because I do remember that.
So that's that. These are the things that make me, hey, if we getting into it, oh no, I'm not turning my back on you. And I'm gonna make sure I'm close enough to you that if you go in any pocket or reach anywhere, I'm closing the distance and you're gonna be in some major crap. That's it. That's how I roll. And that's just the way that I've always been with anyone. I don't care what color you are. But with white folks, nah, they do that type of stuff. So I don't sleep on them at all. That's just, you're otherwise, not gonna catch me slipping with them. Yeah.
Now, there are some of us out there who don't have those skills, you know, and mm-hmm. just to give the other side of the context, you know, you should always keep your family with you close by, because these things can still happen then, but at least you will be that buffer between them and your family. Absolutely. So we have to incorporate all of these things to try to prevent what happened to this man. I wanted to ask you, I know you had something you want to go into the video, but I wanted to ask about what are your thoughts with this LeBron James school that's being highly publicized right now?
I heard something about it. They said that it was a public school that he was building in his hometown in Ohio. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
In Akron, Ohio.
I almost said Avon. I meant to say Akron. Thank you. And you know what I thought about that is, if it's a school that is connected to the Akron school system and the Akron school system is not a good one, then it could be good. They could get the teachers in there that they need. I don't know what the stipulations are, if he's going to be in control of that or at least have some say and the quality of teachers that teach in that school, things like that. But if their school system is bad and he's connecting his school to their school system, then it might not be a good idea. If it is a school that's independent, that he is able to, you know, control, you know, of course you have to teach certain things within the curriculum in order to fall in line with state regulations. But if it's like, let's say, an African-centered school or something that focuses on the best of what giving these children the best education possible, then it can be an incredible thing, and it might be able to set an example for other people. That's my take on it. I just don't know, because when I've heard that it was a public school, that implies to me that it's connected to the Akron school system. Now, I don't know anything about the Akron school system, but if it is not good, which the overwhelming majority of U.S. school systems are not good, then it could be a situation that might end up over time deteriorating, even though he has good intentions. Unless, of course, if he's putting money into it on a regular basis, then it won't be an impoverished school. So in other words, he'll be able to really supply quality learning, you know, learning materials for these children. One thing I hope that he does do is that I hope he goes back to old school schooling and does not allow electronic equipment in the schools. That's what I hope he does, because that's what the people who run Silicon Valley, it's like 20 to 30 white men over there in the West Coast, they have a special school that all of their children go to, and they don't allow any technology, no tablets, no cell phones, no computers, no nothing. They use regular books. The teacher has a blackboard, and they teach the old school way, because they said they do not want their children getting addicted to the products that they create. So if these people who created this stuff are steering their families and themselves away from it, we should be doing the same, because we've done numerous shows discussing the toxicity of these electronic devices, especially in the hands of young children. So that's something I'm hoping he does, you know, but I'm not him. And VGQ, whatever he does choose to do, I hope it's a positive thing for the people of the children, specifically of Akron. And I hope that he's able to get really high quality black and non-white teachers in the school, you know, so that tradition of the school to prison pipeline, which the maiden, the Statue of Liberty of that whole system is the white female. So hopefully he can do things in a way that's conducive to helping our children. So that's all I hope. That's all I got to say on that.
Well, there are several more things, and it ties right into the video we just listened to.
Okay.
Because he's doing that, and it's a lot of us, and that's nothing we're going to get into right now, but it's a lot of us who are looking for him to fail because of that same reason, saying that it's attached to the public school system. But if I understand it right, and if I'm wrong, someone could correct me. But with this, remember when Trump got in, the magnet schools was big now, even before they presented that law. So him paying so much of his own money is the reason why they got that school to going. And I believe that Jalen Rose done the same thing up in Detroit.
Okay.
Him opening the school is.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, hold on, Ross. Him opening the school is a is one thing, and like you said, hopefully it can be used very constructive for us. I'm not sure if they would have the African centered in there with it being so public because it's for at risk children. So it may be more than just us inside of there. And a lot of people are saying that these poor white people will be taking over the school. Because it's more of them, just by sheer numbers. So these are some of the concerns that our people.
Do you know that?
Well, yes, it is very much so.
Okay, so I'm thinking the overwhelming majority, if not all of those children, will be black. So that's great. If there are white children there, that's understandable. You got poor whites that live amongst us too. So that's going to possibly be the case. But it seems to me that the overwhelming majority of children he'll be reaching are black children. So that's all I'm saying. And I just hope it's a constructive thing for them. They get the most out of it. And like I said, I'm thinking if it's connected to him, he might invest the dollars that are needed because the government's not going to give him jack. And if he's investing, then they have a greater chance of getting the highest quality education possible, even though it's for at-risk children. And that can transform their trajectory from one of going to into slavery or potentially dying young to something where they can really, really, you know, do something constructive and positive for themselves and the community. So that's what I was saying.
Yes,
hopefully
you are correct. You made your point very well, and that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. Yes, he has a foundation connected to it, but here's what I wanted to say is that he talked about Trump. You know, he's a very vocal athlete, and they even asked him about running for president. Well, these white people are attacking him based off of the fact, you know, because they feel like they can, that idea of whiteness that we was just talking about, the privilege that comes with it to tell someone else what they should think and what they should say. So I just wanted to throw that out there about LeBron James. Give a congratulations to him, at least
absolutely.
In my opinion.
Congrats. Big up, yeah, for sure. No, that's massive props for that. And like I said, I just hope he's able to do everything that he wishes to do, which I know is to help people. So that's what I wish him with that. Now, it's interesting because in one section of the video, they interview like this white college professor, and you heard him say in a brief blurb that black studies was a direct response to the tyranny of white people. So it was a plausible, direct response to the suffering that we were going through. And what he said was historically accurate because she was talking about white studies being offensive and all of this stuff. But remember that black people did not coalesce around blackness until white supremacy. When we encountered white supremacy, we had to go from a tribal understanding to, oh, wait, we're getting treated like this because we all have dark skin. That was what we that's when we were forced to coalesce around blackness. But white supremacy started with the coalescing around whiteness. So she's actually skewing history and everything. And this is the type of stuff these, like you said, these people learn. They don't investigate. They don't research. So they would listen to that, and they would be ready to go out and kill some black people behind that video. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the type of violence you could breed with this little frail looking, you know, damsel in distress going in, making up stuff as she goes along. And then even the white professor in the video was historically accurate in stating that black studies was a plausible response to the system of white supremacy and what was being done to us. And again, I just state we coalesced around our color when we contacted white supremacy. When you live around black people, there's no reason to tell them I'm black. Y'all all the same. So I'm not going to go to you and be like, yo, I'm black. Yo, I'm black too. Yeah, son, I'm black. That's retarded. It's only when it's counterposed or juxtaposed to something that is opposite or different from oneself. then you have to make a difference. Oh, the person who assaulted me had blonde hair and blue eyes. They were not black. They were what? White. There it is. So it's always an interaction with another group that creates the need to make a differentiation. So if something hits the fan, you can properly describe, A, it was those people who did it. This is what they look like, and they ain't one of us. So go ahead.
Nah, I was just letting you know we got a caller, so we can go to the caller after you get done after the break. Right now, you're listening to Real Life on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Man, that you played that right on time, Brother Scotty. That was perfect. Perfect. Welcome to Real Life, the radio show. You are on with Brother Roz and myself. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. Press ** to put yourself in queue, and we'll be with you as soon as possible. If you had a little bit more you wanted to get in, Brother Roz, if not, I would like to go to the caller.
Yeah, we can go to the caller.
Area code 478. You're live on Real Life. What is your name? Where you calling from? What's your question or comment?
Hello, good evening. I'm calling from Macon, Georgia. This is a great conversation about definitions. I think it's really important, especially the context. And I think, I don't have children, but for those that have children, especially little children, you should start with this early. You may not jump into race early because they're like 6 months or whatever. But the context, you know, in the context of this family, you're the child, in the context of this, blah, 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 so on and so forth, you know, build up to maybe when it's between 3 and 5, I don't know, you could bring in race or, you know, however you do it. I'm not going to tell people how to parent their kids, but I think it's important to bring in, you know, definitions and context so they see how they could connect, how things connect with each other, and that will, I think, enable critical thinking as well, because that's an important skill. Because critical thinking involves putting things together. And also, I listened to the video with the lady, I guess the white lady. I have to admit, there's one thing I did agree with, that this multiculturalism, I can't even say it. I guess that really means it doesn't work.
No. It's all good. Take your time.
Multiculturalism, it really doesn't work. Like, she brought up the instance of the Nordic people. Those white people minded their business, and they had no problem. Then the other, they kind of minded their business. So no, you're not going to have no problem. When you're starting to give people business and they fight back, there are problems. I don't know what part of that she didn't get. You know, there were not criminals running all over Africa until the whites came, not even just when they came, but they stayed and they did whatever. Now you have all these problems. I know nowadays, and some of the stuff she said is true. You know, why are we going to these places? Because the places that we tried to build up, you take away from us. You leave us no option. We're really not that excited as you think about coming to work for you, and I think she just is like, you know,
really justification. Yeah, because she's justifying, because what it is that these people are going to the place that has vampired the resources where they come from. And because of the behavior of those same European countries, where they come from is unstable and they can't survive there. So where do you go? The place that's most prosperous, that you think you can make a good living for yourself. And those are the people who have pirated all of your resources, all of your, you know, your precious metals, all of that stuff. So of course you're going to go to those places. So they're upset because they're thinking of genetic annihilation, but they didn't calculate this in, as a byproduct of their machinations in other parts of the world. The byproduct is going to be mass migration, and they're migrating right to where you were. So you're absolutely correct. Brilliant addition.
And also, I heard you at the beginning. I didn't hear the conversation that you had with the professor because I didn't know the show was on. I guess I don't keep up like I should. But I do agree with that, with the fact that you said that you do need to start with some definitions, and you said that this person didn't. I don't care what it is. Again, start simple. Again, when you have kids, start simple. You start with definitions. That's how you build arguments. I wasn't on a debate team, but I went to a couple, and they used to start with some definitions, some rules. I mean, even in your house, this is how we operate in this house. This means this, this means that. That's how you do everything. No one does anything in and of themselves. People think they do, and maybe that's the problem. People think
yes.
they do. But everything you do, I know a lot of times we talk about, you know, the nonviolent drug offenders, and I understand that they shouldn't be locked up, but I've seen, because I work with people, well, I volunteer with people who have went to prison for drugs and came back, and yes, they might have felt better, but their family was destroyed. There is an effect. Now, maybe you shouldn't go to prison for that effect, but I've seen the children like, oh, my mommy, you know, my mommy can't take care of me because she's in prison. I know some, they use drugs. It was a nonviolent offense. The man died twice. The child probably got confused because the first time he died, he came back to life. But when it happened again for real, she was probably confused, like, oh, he'll come back. No, he did not come back. He died for real this time. He is not coming back. There are effects. Two things that you do, and they're good effects. You graduate from college, you go work, you know, not every effect of something is bad, but you don't do things alone in a vacuum.
Well, it's just it's whatever trajectory that you're putting your children on, since you were speaking about children, and you're right, we have to start these things out early. And alongside of that, we also have to make sure that they understand when they're dealing with other confused people, because if you're not identifying that, then you're just about ready to fall in that same trap. So thank you, sister. Very appreciate your commentary very much, but absolutely. We're getting down here at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to go into this last video real quick, and we're going to finish this discussion out. And thank you.
Yes,
always
you.
Check us out and let us know what's on your mind.
Absolutely, please do. That feminine energy is a necessity. Greatly appreciate it.
Brother Scotty, if you will, we'll play that last article.
Oh, the last video.
And I will put it. All right, thank you, Brother Scotty. Okay, we give it just a little minute. Did you after we get into this last article, Brother Rise, it was one more thing I want to go through. We went through the definitions, we had the discussion about, we finna finish up the discussion, and then I want to get into the final part, which is the understanding and why we have to understand who we're talking to based upon these their definitions and how they deem stuff versus our own, and how to make that communication gap close it a little bit.
Yes. The only thing I would say in reference to that is that the other participant in the conversation has to be willing to give up themselves in the form of a definition. And I think everybody who's a part
so
of the conversation.
So a lot of people, if you look into.
Brother Scott.
Yes, are you ready for the video?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So a lot of people, if you look into the finances, they speak on the great wealth gap between blacks and whites. Why aren't they on the same playing field? Now, the racists would say, well, black people are just lazy. The racists would say black people, all they want is handouts. They don't want to do for themselves. Black people whine, and black people just want to be given everything. This is what the racists have to say. And in order for you to understand the argument I'm going to use based on history, and based on facts that really even the racists can't dispute, they are the last ones that need to be speaking to black people about anything. Because if anybody got more given to them, more handouts given to them, would be their group. Nobody else has gotten that much before. We're going to travel back in time. And it will also explain to you what is really white privilege they mention. Because see, a lot of people mention white privilege, but you're not articulating it very well based upon history and fact. So we're going to try to do this in this video. We're going to cover three things that the U.S. government has done to give white Americans an advantage over black people or anyone else. If you travel back in time, you will figure this thing out. Now, the first thing, the first program that they had to give white Americans an advantage, it was called the headright system. Now, back in Virginia, 1618, they came up with the headright system. Now, this system was to give 50 acres of land to every person that's head of the household. And they will usually give them between 50 to 100, but they can give them up to 1,000 acres of land. Now, we know this land was Indian territory. How did they get all this land from the Indians? Well, we know that the Indians didn't have firearms and cannons and all this other stuff. So they slaughtered the Indians and took their land. Bottom line. Because all this stuff was Native American territory. So if they wanted more people over here, that came up with this system and said, listen, if you pay for your voyage to come over here from Europe, we will give you 100 acres of land. You get your 100 acres of land, you could build your farms, you could build your plantations and all this other stuff. And so people got money together and came over here. They got the free land for free, given by the government, completely for free. And they settled here. Now, wealthy people that was already over here, if they brought in servants, indentured servants, and slaves, they would get 50 acres per indentured servant or slaves. That's why they packed those boats so tight on having Africans on top of each other. It's because every African that came over here was 50 acres of land. You know, you get that? So it was a whole lot of money being made on top of the slaves getting here and doing the jobs for free that they did not pay for. Now, you remember when they would say that, well, white people were slaves too? Well, that is more so the Irish that was indentured servants. And those in that time period that came over, a lot of them had came over even with some of the Africans. They had to come work for 5 to 7 years. But they wasn't a slave. Don't get me wrong. They wasn't. But they had to work they debt off. And after the 5 to 7 years, those indentured servants, Irish, a lot of them, was given land closer to Indian territory, like way away from all the white settlers. This is what happened to them. But they still got land after they worked their debt off. But the black man and black woman got nothing but misery, pain, and horror. And of course, this stuff was legal at that time period. Now, let's bring us to the second thing that got white Americans ahead, the Homestead Act of 1862. The Homestead Act was given by the U.S. government. You could make application. They had all this land for, to just give people, and they gave them land, literally. Black people didn't get this land at all. And if a black person possibly was given a land, it's probably one of the ones who were part of, you know, even from slavery times, they had the black boule, you know, the blacks who are the tokens within their society and they trust and they like and use as a buffer to get a hold to us. But they got ahead by getting all that land. So you had two systems so far that's given nothing but land. And the African didn't get anything at all. In the same year in 1862, when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, he signed it and freed the slaves. But there were 930 slave owners petitioning the U.S. government for a reparation for those slaves. And the U.S. government gave 930 slave owners the amount of money of $300 at that time period per slave, and the U.S. government paid for close to 3,000 slaves. Now, if for every slave, $300 equivalent to our money now is close to $7,200 if you do the inflation calculator. So that's a lot of money that they gave out to them at that time period for losing their slaves. But the black man and black woman didn't get anything. No kind of reparation, no kind of land, nothing. Nothing but death, misery, and pain. Then you come to the most recent thing that happened back in the 1930s all the way up to the late 60s. The redlining program by the FHA and the VA loans, which black people in the military could not get these VA loans. Now, the banks at one point in time weren't lending to nobody, so the FHA, the federal government, came in and said, listen, we'll back this up with our money. So they started giving loans, low interest loans, for white people only to get homes, because they wanted to create the white middle class. And but these white people could not move in certain areas, and so what the banks would do, they would look at the whole city, they'll look at, you know, what they deem as the good areas by color. The blue is the best area, yellow is kind of declining, this still has some value, and red is the bad areas. And most of these red, they call it redlining on a map, they would say, okay, this is what the blacks said, this is a bad area, this is deteriorating, we don't want you nowhere near them, so you're going to move over here to the blue area. And that's where the whites was moving to. Now, no black people had a chance to move to those blue areas. See, the government even created the ghettos, the slums, because no black family could get those loans at all. They had to stay in those deplorable conditions. They had to stay in neighborhoods that was not good, while the white families was given plenty advantage to move to good areas. Like I said, all the way up to the late 60s. So you look at in history. You've been given land upon land. Slave masters were given reparations, and white families was given homes, very, very low interest when the banks weren't loaning to anybody at all. Then you take a group of people who never was given land, who never had a homestead act, who never had a redlining program or even be able to participate in the VA loan program to get homes. And then after that, you want to say to those people who never got any of that, they always want a handout, when history shows that who got the most handouts? These people are whining. These people don't work hard. What have you worked hard to do, Mr. or Miss Racist? What have you done? You've given everything in this country. You build everything off of slave labor. Even companies to the existence to this day, at least about 240 companies still to this day, had their ties back to slavery. There's what? Millions of people still in this country that's tied to the old slave money. And then the black people say something about reparations is a problem. It's not right. It's divisive. It's not fair. Well, it wasn't fair when you was getting all the land, millions of acres of land. It wasn't fair then either, but that's okay. So when you see these things about wealth gaps and things like that, understand it comes from somewhere. Now, I know what some going to say. I had nothing to do with slavery. I had nothing to do with any of that. Why y'all talking about that? Because everything in this country that's happening today has a lineage to something. So when you say certain things, understand you was given a shot. We wasn't given a shot like that. What? Oh, well, you guys aren't slaves anymore. Oh, okay. Really? We still mental slaves. We still oppressed in a lot of ways. Well, you guys, you know, you're not in the civil rights movement time. No, we're not. But really, has anything changed? Police still killing us. Black people still getting lynched, but they're lying and saying it's suicides. Black people unemployment is high, no different than back you know, those periods, at least between, when they had segregation, blacks had more jobs because they had to create their own businesses. Okay. But outside of all that, those excuses, everybody else got reparations. They just gave the Holocaust survivors more money as a recent President Obama. The Japanese people got money for being in internment camps. They gave them $20,000 each family. Okay, and they didn't go through slavery. It was just internment camps, right? Native Americans was given, I heard a recent lawsuit of $534 million, which they should get that because look what happened to them. But when the black man and black woman talk about reparations, oh, no, 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 no. Well, you know, you've been getting reparations ever since you got here, but we can't have anything. And that's the thing. We have to keep researching history to understand the difference. If you really want to bring people together, if you want to stop dividing, well, you know what? You have to make right the wrongs of the past. The wise thing to do is make it right. Do like you've done to the Native American and the Japanese and even the Holocaust survivors. Give what you owe, because really it's what you owe. It's all that free labor. It was free. You didn't pay anything. All the murders, all the things that happened to black people. We have been terrorized more than any group of people. You talk about ISIS. ISIS is nothing compared to slave master. ISIS is nothing compared to even some of these police. What are you talking about? I mean, we've been through so much in this country. And we have to know these things in order for us to learn and grow of ourselves. If we stay in the dark, because, you know, they're not going to teach these things in school. They're not going to tell you about the Head Right program. They're not going to tell you about the Homestead Act of 1862. They're not going to tell you about the redlining and VA loan program where blacks can get none of that at all. It was exclusively a racist program. They're not going to tell you that because they would have to tell people that, you know what, we were given an advantage because of the color of our skin, period, and you wasn't because you were black and a piece of crap. They basically would have to say that, but they're not going to say that. And this, what I'm talking about today, you can all go research it yourself. This is about not only educating black people, it's about educating all people to understand why certain things in this country the way it is. So when black people bring up the term white privilege, that's what they're talking about. You were privileged to get everything. You're privileged to be set up in a certain areas. Even you're privileged with the benefit of the doubt. You're privileged when your kids do wrong that they can be an individual. But when our kids do wrong, they represent the whole race. Oh, that's how black people are. That's typical of them. But if a white person do it, well, that's just them. That's not all of us. We don't be like that. You know, and if a person do the same thing and make a blanketed statement, then that's so wrong. So it's just things that we have to research and look into. And this is something for you just to be educated on. Because if you really want to, like you say, come together, if you really want to be one people, well, you got to make what's wrong right in order to do that. And if you don't want to make what's wrong right, then it lets you know that you're just an evil person who don't really want to do the right thing. You like the way it is. You like one group being above the other, and you like the advantage of that. And that's fine. You could do that, and I get it. It really doesn't bother me. I've accepted. In this country, there are people who really like the society to benefit one group and not benefit all. I understand that. I am a realist. But what I'm doing is just trying to educate you on what got people in that position. That's all. That way, when these people talk to you again and say something about what you don't do and what you want and handouts, you can say, you know what? Let's talk about all the handouts you got. We'll talk about that. Because really, who's the recipient, biggest recipient of affirmative action? It's not black people. Actually, white women are the biggest recipients of affirmative action. But they don't like to even talk about that, you know, because they'll be calling what, actually researching something for yourself? You know, I mean, but that's something we don't do. We just listen to Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and just whatever they say, we go with it as gospel and not doing anything at all to look into things. So, guys, just make sure you look into these programs, research it, teach it to your children. Let them know the true history of this nation and what the U.S. government has done to give advantage to one group and not the other. So we can understand why we still have some issues to this day, and we possibly, hopefully, one day can fix these issues. Well, I don't know. Hit me up in the comments, shoot the commentaries, subscribe.
Yo, that was we ran that one a little thick, and I apologize. I mismanaged, so we'll work on that. But that was a perfect rounding to what we was discussing. He added a few points, but for the most part, that's what we had agreed on, and it goes back to the beginning of the show: definitions, mm-hmm. discussions, and understanding. Yeah. Understanding that these are the people that you're dealing with, and not everyone. I'm gonna go ahead and throw that out there. Not everyone that you will run into will be of that mindset, but you have to assume. excuse me. You have to assume that they are, because these things will get you hurt. Like he was saying, just the privilege of being believed. We've seen this recent wave of being called the police upon. Yeah. And just recently, a young lady was trying to get out of jail up in New York, I believe, Roz. You know, mm-hmm. called the police on her. White lady called the police on Vin Rames at his own home. Opened the door with a 9 in his face. You know, so we have to be very particular of how we maneuver, as Scotty says, behind these enemy lines, because that also includes your home. So we're here at the bottom of the hour. Thanks for chilling with us tonight, Brother Rise. I know you want to end your commentary and give us the prayer, because we're right here at 5 minutes.
Sure. I think the video is a great counterposition to that fluff nonsense that little race soldier was talking. And it just kind of rounds out the facts for what they really are. So I just thought it was great. I wish we had more time to get into it, but we don't. So, you know, we're going to get ready to roll out. So thanks again to everyone, Brother Tag, the sister from Georgia. I don't think she gave a name. So peace to you too. It was great having your commentary. Brother Scotty, of course, your commentary was great as well. And we greatly appreciate you. Thanks for everything you do, like I said before. And we're going to say the prayer now and get ready to roll out. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times and all places. Each and every time that we are in contact with another black person, it has been time to replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is I am. The all can I can. The all does I do. Once again, thanks for spending your Tuesday evening with us. Peace and love to you all. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again next week. Good night.
Peace, peace. Good night.
What up, son?
What's good, Dad?
Billie Holiday said a long time ago, no two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you, and I'm gonna let you know
what it is, what it is.
I believe in revolution, the retribution with 2 tons of pollution. I take a shit on your producer, or should I say your production? Yeah. Pretty, I make disgusting, track slaughtered, whack MCs aborted, no discussion now. Lesson one, order be learned, no. Biting the loud props gotta be earned. A lot of rappers nowadays are sound alike, so wanna be thugs, spitting garbage on the mic. Now I'm a golden age baby, Brooklyn stand up. Back then fake rappers got no love and banged up. I resurrect beats like the walking dead. I'm like Rick slaying his track, like 2 to the head. Whether
brother off the header with the pad of a pen. Any MC in front of me is meeting the end. No matter who I'm against, they're gonna regret ever battling me, cause my lyrics are lead. And the vest ain't nearly enough protection for the lyrical destruction I'm projecting. I'm sending deadly heights in your direction. I'm Ted Kaczynski, explosive presence. When it comes to hip-hop at its core, it's about original style, original flow. Stay true to yourself and you never will fold, and never let anyone deter you from your goals. It's out of control the way these rappers sell their souls. They don't care whether in public or behind closed doors. Son, never get caught up in trends or fads. You might make money for the moment, but it never will last. Never lie to yourself and you won't lie in the booth. Son, the booth is your confessional, speak the truth. I get up on the mic and let my bowels loose. Like a bird overhead, I'm stealth-bombing a fool. You know the rules. Brooklyn.
Yeah. Originality overflows in me, and the truth is,
that's what it is. Now I understand what it is.